Hi, everyone, and welcome to Book Hype episode number 140. Today, we're going to be talking about book clubs, which is very exciting. My name is Karen, and I am joined by Kristen and Brittany. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
If you guys would like to chat with us, you can find us on Twitter at Book Hype, Facebook.com/hypeablebooks, and on Goodreads at Hypeable Books, where we have been posting a lot of our reviews. And of course, you can always visit our book section on hypeable.com. We're going to kick this off as usual by talking about what we've been reading lately. And I'm on like a 3-episode streak, you guys. I'm so excited. I have been reading a little bit lately and two pretty different things, I'm not going to lie. The first one is, as I told you last week, I read Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. I reread it for probably the millionth time, but it was delightful, as it usually is. I wrote a couple of fun articles on Hypeable if you guys want to check that out. First one was about all the background characters, that if, you know, she took them out of the book, Butterfly Effect, would Harry Potter still have defeated Voldemort? I don't know. The ice cream lady, she's very important. She's my favorite background character.
You're funny.
And the other one I wrote was first introductions for all of the major characters in Harry Potter, which was pretty cool. Some of them only get a line and end up being very important characters, and other ones like Dumbledore get this sprawling paragraph with great details about what he looks like and that sort of thing. And it was really cool to kind of revisit all of that stuff.
I love that stuff, like, especially when the Harry Potter movies were done. Like, I loved looking at first line, last line stuff. Mm. Like, Ginny's first line in the series, in, you know, in the movies versus her very last line. Like, that sort of stuff always gets me. Like, I just like to see, look back on what our first thoughts were from that character or whatever. So, I liked that one. That one was really cute.
Yeah. We were very grateful to have Danielle on for that episode. But, Brittany, we missed you.
Oh, I'm sure.
You did. I'm glad you're back. And you went to do some Dr. Seuss stuff.
I did. I decided I'm going to take myself on a mini road trip for 4th of July weekend, and just for like one night. And the place I picked was the Dr. Seuss Museum in Springfield, Massachusetts. And it was wonderful and weird. And the best part is that the whole bottom floor, when you walk in, is every single room is painted with just floor to ceiling themed to a book. And it is unbelievable the amount of artistry that exists in here. And you know how when you're in museums and they're like, this is where like Ted Geisel grew up, and like, you know, they have pictures and like of the families and stuff like that. Every single sign in the Seuss Museum rhymes.
Yes. What? That's awesome.
Rhyme. So every description, everything rhymes. And so I just spent the whole time, I actually read every single thing that was in that museum because it was so delightful.
That's amazing.
And then upstairs, on the second floor, they have like his office set up and where he used to draw, and like replications of his like sitting room and reading room. But then they have this exhibit called Ted to Ted, and his nephew was named Ted, and he used to write him letters. And like they have, so Ted Geisel donated all of his letters from between him and his uncle to the museum. And they're so funny. He was so funny and witty, and that he has responses to like invitations to like, you know, birthday parties and like letters that he wrote to different people. And he used to like draw custom little Valentine's Day cards for people in his family. And he has like one letter that he wrote to Teddy, and it's like he always used the Cat in the Hat stationery, and so it always has the cat on the one side. And he drew like a really sad reindeer because he had a belated like Christmas card to him. And he like counted out like how much money he would send him, like a check for a birthday. And he's just like, if you wish to buy like 15,000 vote for Harry pins or something like that, like, you know, you could do that, but I hope you don't wish that. And like everything was just so funny, and he was so cool. And I'm very happy that I went. And there was a sculpture garden, and I got to high-five a Lorax. So, you know, like.
Awesome.
I saw that. I saw your picture. Because didn't you change your Twitter?
I did. I changed profile picture from me pointing at Kermit to me high-fiving Laura. So still very much fitting with my personality.
Yes, yes, I would agree. That's cool. Well, we wish you had been around to talk about Harry Potter, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of chances, as always, seeing as it's perpetually in the news. So to take a sharp turn away from Dr. Seuss, the other thing that I read this week was Dagon by H.P. Lovecraft. So pretty different, not gonna lie, but I'm slowly making my way through a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stories. I have a huge volume that a friend gave to me, and he marked off the ones that are, you know, should be read. The ones that get referenced the most, that kind of thing, Call of Cthulhu, you know, etc. So I'm actually really excited to read through those. Dagon was weird. It was only a couple pages long, and it ends in a sort of, I don't know if I'm going to get, like, killed for saying this, but it reminds me a little bit of Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, obviously, they both wrote horror, but that kind of weird, it's ended, but like, what did he mean kind of thing? And it could be interpreted several different ways. And I just feel some similarities there. But this book also has notes in the margins. And at first I was like all hipster and elitist. I'm like, I don't need this. I can interpret it how I want to. But then I kind of read a couple of them. I was like, actually, it's providing really useful information. Maybe I should get off my high horse and read through these notes. And it was really cool just giving context for the story. And one of the notes near the end is, you know, scholars have debated if what the main character in the short story was seeing was actually real, if it was a hallucination, and what it meant by all of that. But that was just the first one, and I have a lot more to go, but I'm really excited to keep delving into that. Have either of you read Lovecraft before?
No.
Yes.
Yes. Hesitant yes or
no, I don't think I have.
Okay.
He was a character in something that I'm thinking of. they used H.P. Lovecraft in something, and it was not, yeah, nope. Not.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, so I'm excited to keep going through that and sharing more with you guys, because I wanted to read more horror, and I figured this is not a bad place to start, considering his influence over the genre in general, so it should be pretty fun. Again, taking another sharp turn, Kristen, your stuff is pretty far from H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, just a little. First of all, my weekly plug, I guess now, I listened to Roar by Cora Carmack because I can't get enough of this book. And I wanted to listen to the audiobook anyway, because it's another way for me to like take in the story. And I listen to stuff at work all the time. I really liked the audiobook for this. I'm just basically just anxious for the next book, and I have to wait a very long time for it. Like, this past year, I got the arc in, like, March, so the earliest I'll get the sequel is maybe March of next year, because she's writing it now. So, we'll see. But I have to talk about it, because I still love it, and I want everyone to read it. So, I listened to Roar. That was awesome. The other book that I read this week was The Impossible Vastness of Us. It's not Samantha Young's first YA novel, but it's her first, like, contemporary YA novel. Like, I think her past ones were more, like, paranormal or whatever. I have not read any of her other YA. I've read her straight-up, like, contemporary romance stuff, both the On Dublin Street series and the Hearts Boardwalk, which I love both. So I was really excited about this because, A, the cover is really cute, and my review for this is posted on Hypeable. You can check it out and see the cover art and all that. The cover art is just really adorable. It's these three people under a red umbrella, and the whole cover is like blue rain, and it's just really cute. But the story is really, really awesome. It's basically about this girl who kind of gets yanked by her mother out of her comfort zone in California and gets taken to Massachusetts because her mother has met this guy. Her mom works as like a flight attendant, and she meets this guy and moves her and her daughter to Massachusetts so she can marry this guy. And it's basically the story of this girl learning to fit in new surroundings with new people and all that. She quickly makes like friends she has the same struggles that any character does when you throw them in a new situation. People kind of misunderstand her and that sort of stuff. But she makes these two friends, especially, that throughout the story, you realize that it's not just a story about the main character. It's a story about these three friends and how the secrets that they keep affect how their friendship grows. Like, each one of them has something that they don't want to tell anyone, and how that secret is revealed to each other and the circumstances behind it and, you know, all of that. It just, it's a really, really honest and just beautiful novel about YA, like, culture and youth, and like what secrets we keep, like what secrets kids keep these days, and the terrible things that happen to some kids, and, you know, the kinds of things that kids keep secret. So I just thought it was really, really lovely, and I highly, highly recommend it. It's, yeah, I love her stuff, but I will definitely be checking out her YA too, because she has a really good handle on it.
Awesome. Sounds interesting. I'd read that.
Yeah.
And Brittany, what have you been reading?
So I just finished reading Unsub, and this past week when I wasn't on, in anticipation of interviewing Meg Gardner, who's been writing crime for many, many, many years. She was a lawyer first, but this was her first crime novel in a new series with a new heroine, who is Catherine Hendricks, and she's a great lead investigator in this book. And the subject is about this killer who had a random killing pattern like 20 years before Catherine became an investigator, and her father was the lead investigator on this case. And it was, she likes to call, say, sparked by the Zodiac Killer, not inspired by, but sparked by the killings of the Zodiac Killer. And she grew up around in Southern California when those killings were happening. And you really get that fear of this, just this killer who you don't know who it is. And that's where the name of the book Unsub comes from, because that's shorthand for, I think it's unidentifiable subject or unidentified or unknown, something on subject in the police world. And yeah, something on Criminal Minds says it all the time. So.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that, it was really great, and it's very much a thriller, but it's very, like, you know, you hear the phrase psychological thriller. It is really psychological. Like, I didn't like to read it at night, because I was like, ah, it's a lot for my brain before I go to bed. So it's really good. Looking forward to more with Catherine Hendricks coming shortly from her. And the other book that I have been reading, and I'm looking forward to enjoying my wonderful day off tomorrow, because it's 4th of July week at work, is The Golden Compass. I finally started my Philip Pullman reread, and it's just making me smile so much while reading it, just going back into this world and re-meeting Lyra. And, you know, it's the magic is still there, which is something I was a little bit nervous about. However, it seems to be sticking around, which is great. So if you are on the edge about rereading it before Book of Dust comes out this October, I highly recommend reading it, because I think it's going to be a one day per book type of deal, because I can't put it down. I can't wait to go back to reading it.
Yay. And that's a perfect segue into our new section, Deal of the Day, where we give you guys some books that are on sale on Amazon. Last week, we had a little bit of a misstep. I went back to check to see if the deals were still working, and they weren't by the time the podcast was out. So we're going to try this again. If you guys notice that they are not working, please let us know. We really like the idea of doing this whole Deal of the Day kind of thing, so you guys can find some deals on books out there, because it can add up pretty quickly. But we might have to go to another plan to see if it works. But Kristen, please take it away.
So I was looking for a couple of books this week that either just went on sale so we could try and get it so that you guys can actually take advantage of it by the time this comes out. And in my search, I discovered that all three of Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials books are on sale for $1.99 a piece. These are the ebooks. And it just, like, A, surprised me, because with his new one coming out, they could have, like, jumped the price and people would still pay for it, because when you're getting ready for a new book like that, a lot of times people are, you know, eager to to, you know, reread and get catch back up or whatever. So I thought that was really cool. Make sure to check that out if you're interested in the His Dark Materials series or getting ready for Book of Dust. And also, I noticed that Rule by Jay Cronover, which is the first book in the Marked Men that Karen has also read, is on sale for $1. It's 99 cents right now. And hers usually stick around, like the sale usually lasts a couple weeks. So hopefully you guys will be able to take advantage of those. Both, you know, I have not read His Dark Materials, so depending on how much money I have sitting in my account, I may be taking advantage of this one myself, but I can't recommend Rule highly enough because it's just, it's such a good book and it starts that series off so well. So I hope that those help and save you guys a little money.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you. And actually, Kristen's on a roll because she also came up with our book bites for this week, which I thought was a really cool topic. And it's all about who's an auto-buy author for you? So, Kristen, what do you mean by an auto-buy author?
It's an author that it doesn't matter what they're writing. It doesn't matter what it is. You're buying their book because they have a new book. There are some authors that I love that I can't say that they're an auto-buy because, you know, one of their books or two of their books in the past have really let me down, or they've written a series that isn't quite my forte. And so I don't necessarily trust entirely that I will love everything they write, but there are a handful of them that it doesn't matter what they write. I want to read it and I'm going to read it. And so, you know, some of my more beloved ones aren't necessarily auto-buys. I want to read the description before I like sell my soul and purchase it. But yeah, there are quite a few auto-buy authors that I can't help it. As soon as I know they have a book out, I need to read it.
And what are some of your auto-buy authors?
For me, clearly Cora Carmack is one of them.
I never would have guessed. There.
I mean, she can do no wrong in my eyes. So yeah, I will read everything she writes. Also, Kylie Scott has never let me down. Stage Dive is great and her new one is great. I have not read her first series, but I'm sure I'd love it. I just haven't had time. Lauren Lane is another one. I've read almost all of hers, except there's one series that I'm still waiting on, and it's just because I haven't had time. Serena Bowen, I may be a little behind on her stuff, but I will read her until the end of the earth. Like, her stuff is just great. And lastly, Mariana Zapata. There's only one book of hers that I didn't enjoy thoroughly, but I still, like, trust that anything she writes is going to be pretty high quality and that, you know, like, I'm at least going to somewhat enjoy it. So those are definitely one clicks for me.
Awesome. And Brittany, what about you?
Mine would definitely be, I mean, if you've listened to me at all, you probably know this, but Sarah Dessen. Doesn't matter what she's writing, I'll read it and probably enjoy it and reread it every summer. That was an easy one. I also really love Neil Gaiman. So anything that he has coming out, whether it's Norse mythology or a short story collection or a collection of literally, like, he had this come out, I think it was last year or the year before. It's just like intros he's written for books or speeches he's given. Read it, devoured it, loved it, bookmarked it, the whole nine yards. Love Neil Gaiman so much.
By the way, I had Audible credits to kill and I bought the Norse mythology series from there and it's read by him too. So I thought you'd be proud of me for that.
I am. Well, I'm not surprised. I think you will love it.
Yeah.
It's really good. Plus it's good that he's doing it because the pronunciations are really good. I listened to a sample of it.
Oh, cool.
Which I kind of wish I had before I bought it, because I have like the Kindle version of it. And because I was like, oh, I'll read a story every now and then when I'm traveling or whatnot. And some of the names, I'm like, am I saying this right? It's like rereading the name Hermione for the first time all over again, because I did not pronounce that name correctly in my head. Nope. When that book came out. A lot of my favorite authors are dead. So, like, you know, Conan Doyle's not coming out with any new Sherlock anytime soon. But, you know, Brittany Cavallaro is a great Sherlock Holmes author. So any of her Holmes novels are definitely on my auto-buy list. I really like Don DeLillo. I read White Noise in high school and I just fell in love with it. So I really I try to pick up anything and everything that he comes out with. Even though I haven't enjoyed his entire collection of work, I still really, I liked his latest book that came out this year or the end of last year. So those are names that definitely just draw me in and make me click. I think Rainbow Rowell too, but she hasn't really had much come out. Her and Maureen Johnson, which we'll talk about a little bit about later. But yeah, those two I give a pause before I'm like, oh, auto order. And I guess Philip Pullman could join that list because as soon as the Book of Dust was announced, I was like, pre-order, done.
Awesome. Yeah, just like Kristen, my first one's not going to be surprising at all. It's Rick Riordan. I will read everything that he's ever written, and I have so far, including all the little side Percy Jackson, like, fun novels that aren't really books. They're just, like, weird guides to Camp Half-Blood and that kind of thing. I love them. I think they're really fun. Some other ones would be definitely Lauren Lane. I mean, once I pick up one of her books, I literally cannot put it down, so I will read everything she's ever written. I haven't so far, but I trust her with my life, basically. So those will be devoured in no time. Alexander Bracken is another one. I really fell in love with the Darkest Minds trilogy, and Passenger, of course, was another big one for us. And I just really like her writing style, and I think she's a really cool person and very personable. And I like the stuff that's coming out with the movie and everything. She's really excited about it. So that's one of those things where kind of liked her when I met her at BEA, didn't know her or anything about the book, and that made me interested in reading the book. And from there, it's just kind of a invested in the person, invested in the work kind of thing. And then my last one's Chris Colfer. I really trust him to write interesting stories, whether they're middle grade stuff, whether they're a little bit older. I didn't like Stranger Than Fan Fiction like that much. It's not one of my favorite all-time books ever, but I'm really glad that I read it anyway. And I kind of feel that way about his stuff, that I would read it just to see what he has to say, because I think he has a brilliant mind, and his stuff always kind of makes waves one way or another. People really respect his writing and always kind of want to hear his take on things. So I like, you know, partially just like being in the know, and partially just think he's a fantastic writer.
I like him too. I like his elementary stuff more than his adult stuff. I did like Struck by Lightning a lot.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I really enjoyed that. But I refuse to read Stranger Than Fanfiction. I absolutely refuse.
I don't blame you, honestly. All right, we're going to jump into our main discussion this week, and I'm going to kind of hand it over to Brittany because this was her brilliant idea, and I really like the idea of this because it's relevant to what we do, or maybe I should say what we don't do that much anymore, but we'll get into that a little bit lately. But like I said at the top of the episode, we're going to be talking about book clubs this week. So take it away, Brittany.
Yeah, so I was looking for some book news to talk about, and it struck me that Oprah just recently announced her latest book club pick, and it got me thinking, like, you know, Oprah like looks at something and the world's like, I have to have it. So I mean, I feel like I am an inadequate human being because Oprah gathers a harvest from her garden every day, and I can't grow a tomato. So, you know, until I'm old enough to have a garden, I will never feel successful in Oprah's eyes. And so I also feel this need to read the books that Oprah tells me to
read.
Can
I just ask, was that metaphorical or was that literal? Like, I'm sorry, I really don't know, and I feel stupid for asking.
That was literal. Like, okay. Oprah's Instagram is like how I judge whether I'm successful or not.
And she's
She's like, look, I have 20 dogs and this pile of zucchini. And I'm like, well, I've got one dog and no zucchini, so I'm not there yet.
Oh my God, can that be the title of your autobiography?
Yes. One dog and no zucchini. I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
Oh, Brittany, lovely story.
That is the best title ever. I'm buying that book. Auto buy.
I need to write this down before I lose it.
Yes. I know when the pre-order comes up, I'm buying it.
Yeah, yes. Auto buy. Brittany, lovely.
It'll be our deal of the century before never ever sell.
Oh my god. Crying. I didn't know if we were still talking about harvesting books and you were just making like a garden metaphor, and that's why I got so confused, but good to know it was literal.
Oh yes, it's quite literal.
Okay. Continue.
Yes. So anyway, now that we all know how I feel against judging myself against Oprah, I do feel slightly smarter and better educated by reading what Oprah tells me to read. And I haven't in a while, because the books that she picks, I'm always like, oh, I'm going to pick that up. And then I never do. So when I saw her latest book club pick, it made me think of our book club and also just book clubs in general, especially the Emma Watson book club that she does with our shared shelf, and that's working with like the UN. And so there are all types of book clubs. Libraries have book clubs. I usually pick up books from the book club shelf, even though I'm probably like taking one from someone. It's totally fine. So it made me think, like, what the weight of book clubs, like the weight that a person who recommends the book for the book club carries, how different book clubs are run, like, are there discussions? I know we talked on this podcast a few weeks ago about the One Book, One New York thing, where they had city-sponsored events all over the city at different times, all about one book. And I love how that was run, because it didn't feel like, you know, I mean, yes, it was one person saying like, this is the book we want all of New York to read, but it was also just cool to see the different elements of it. And I just wanted to talk about our experiences with book clubs. Have we ever done another one? Are we like, just our thoughts and stuff. And because I know that I personally, speaking of like the weight of book clubs, like I don't like to be the person to pick a book, because I'm like, oh, well, everybody's going to hate this book that I pick. And yet I'm always the person who's like, oh my God, I hate every book that everybody picks. So I don't know like where the happy medium is between like having the power and then, you know, and giving the power over to some outsider who's like picking the book for people and then not feeding in the discussion. Like, what is the structure? What works for you? What doesn't work for you? And just book clubs in general, are they good? Do we like them?
I like them. I will have to say, before Book Hype, I was only ever in one book club. It was in high school, I believe, and it was probably like 9th or 10th grade. It wasn't, I think I was only in it for about 1 year, but our librarian, who is like young and cool, and I wanted to be just like her, she had a book club where she decided like she wanted to get some students together who were kind of always in the library. And I was really interested in doing it. Maybe one of my friends was in it, but I really didn't know anybody else. And she always picked the books, which I think is my preference, because it forces me to go out of my comfort zone. And I really liked all of the books that she picked. That's where I read The Lovely Bones for the first time. It's where I read The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime and The Secret Life of Bees. She kind of picked these books that for me were really outside of my comfort zone, and that I was reading like Harry Potter and a lot of fantasy stuff and a lot of things that, I mean, they obviously have substance and meaning, but these books were kind of on a different level and they were a little bit darker and a little bit sort of left of center to what I was used to. And I ended up liking all of them a lot, and we had some really great discussions, and it helped me to kind of get used to discussing books on a different level rather than just reading it and not thinking about it ever again. So that was fun for me. And I haven't done one since then, although there is one that does meet up around here that I've been thinking about maybe going to if I can find time. But I also, obviously, when we actually do it, really enjoy our book club discussions.
Yeah, prior to joining you guys on Book Hype, I had never really done a book club. I mean, I guess we sort of had a mini one amongst my friends, like, just after high school when we were all, I mean, we all had read Harry Potter, but, like, we were rereading, and we would sit around the campfire at night talking about this, that, or whatever intriguing thing we read in the newest one. Like, it wasn't necessarily a book club, but we used to spend a lot of time talking about Harry Potter. And when Twilight, like when the books were big, we did some talking about Twilight, which was interesting. Prior to Book Hype, I've never actually really been in a book club. I recently joined a romance one, and they're like, we decided that the best way to like pick books from that is to every month draw a different genre or like subgenre out of a hat, and then everyone recommends books that are in that subgenre, and then she draws one of those out or like picks the best one. Like the girl that's kind of in charge of the whole thing picks it. And so right now our pick for July, we're supposed to have it read by the end of July, is a paranormal romance by War. It's one of the Black Dagger Brotherhood books. I believe its last name is Ward of the author. I've never actually read them. It's a really wildly popular series. Everyone knows of the series, and I've never read them. So I'm supposed to read that by the end of July. I have the audiobook sitting in my Kindle right now, so I have to get to that very soon. But yeah, I really like our discussions on here, and I have in the past. There's a lot of pressure when you're the book chooser, but it's also really exciting when you find one that everyone loves. Like when I first recommended The Year We Fell Down, I was really like nervous about it, but you guys all really liked it, so that was really exciting to add 4 people to my cluster of folks that really love that book. So
and I have to say, I don't know, maybe I'm just weird, I do feel pressure a lot too. But like when we read Don Kurtigich's story and you guys were like, I don't know that I liked it. It was interesting, but still the discussion we had surrounding it was like so good. It's one of those ones that really sticks out in my mind, even if you guys would like never read it again or never read any of her books again. Sometimes coming into something you don't necessarily like, but having that discussion anyway to figure out why, what works for you and what doesn't, is just as interesting to me.
Yeah, and I think that that's, I know we've touched on it a little bit, that just the responsibility, but it's the reaction of the people who are reading it that drives whether or not, you know, it doesn't have to change what you feel about what we're reading, but it is a lot of, it puts a lot on everyone. So like, for example, if I choose a book that no one likes on here, it's very low stakes. Like, you know, it's totally fine. But when Oprah chooses a book, like this was, okay, a little backstory here. I used to watch the Oprah Winfrey Show every day after school. It was incredible. And I miss it every day of my life. When the Million Little Pieces drama started rolling out, I was captivated by it. This was not like, you know, Dr. Phil or anything that was on in the morning time. This was like prime time, 4 p.m. drama with Oprah. And it was unbelievable. So the backstory is that Oprah recommended A Million Little Pieces, which is a memoir by James Frey. And he said, obviously it's a memoir, so you're reading it and you're like, oh my god, all of this stuff happened to him and it's horrible, and this book sold millions and millions of copies, and it was when Oprah still had the book club on TV, so like people, you know, everyone who read it was tuning in to watch it and they were listening to James Frey, and it came out that all of the stuff, not all of it, but a good majority of the stuff that was in the book was a lie. So Oprah like was not happy about this, kicked him out of her book club, but it just generated more buzz for this book. And she was like saying that she was humiliated and was so angry at this guy. And it was unbelievable. She was so angry. And she just like had him back on the show and was like, why did you lie? Can you imagine Oprah Winfrey looking at you with her serious face asking you, why did you lie to her?
No.
I would never recover.
Yeah, me neither.
The list of people I would never want to get pissed, like Oprah would be toward the top, man.
Jeez. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Oh, and this guy, like, he was like, I stand by everything I said in the book, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, It was incredible. It was one of the highlights of watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, was watching this book club drama. So, like, there is some drama in book club, apparently. not to mention that she also recommended 3 Bill Cosby kids books before Bill Cosby.
Ooh.
A lot of stuff happened. But anyway, back to Oprah, who is a wonderful human being. I used to read a bunch of these books because my grandmother, she was one of these people. She would hear that Oprah recommended a book, she'd buy it and never read it, but they would sit in her house. And so I read them. So the first book that I remember reading with that beautiful Oprah Winfrey Book Club sticker on it was She's Come Undone by Wally Lamb. And it was, I was definitely, I don't like to say that anyone is too young to read anything, but it was a story I think I would have needed when I was 16. And not when I read it. And it was, but that story, there are scenes in that, and it's a long book, but there are scenes in that Wally Lamb book that just still stick with me and I've referred to, and they're just, I completely forgot it was an Oprah Winfrey Book Club book till I saw, I was going through the list of books that she has, and I saw the cover of it with the Oprah sticker on it, and I'm like, that's why I read that book, was because my grandmother had it in her house, and it was an Oprah Winfrey Book Club book. Another Oprah Winfrey Book Club book that I read that I don't know why I read, but it was always there in her house, was Where the Heart Is. Again, she didn't read it, but it was always there. It was about this girl who gives birth in a Walmart and she names her baby America. And it's really good. There's a movie. You can check it out. I also read The Reader because of the same reason. So she just had all of these books lying around, but she never read them. And I'm grateful that Oprah recommended them, because then I got to read them, because they were just there, you know, sitting around my childhood. And now that I'm old enough to just participate in different type of book clubs and book challenges, and, you know, there's the Emma Watson book club. If you follow her on Instagram, or you follow the Our Shared Shelf on Instagram, you see her like hiding books all over the city. And I feel like Oprah's, this is where Emma's kind of shifts a little bit. Oprah's book club was very much appointment television. It was, you read the book, you sit and you wait for Oprah to bring the author on to discuss the book. And you could talk about it with your, I guess, adult friends. I, again, was too young when it was like a really big thing, but I did work at a library from ages 15 to 18. So there used to be book club meetings in there. They were always reading like Jodi Picoult, you know, and the, what is My Sister's Keeper. That was always, for some reason, they read that like once a year. I was like, you don't get, it was always a book club book. I always had hundreds of copies of it that I like had to shelve. And I'm like, why do we have so many copies of this book? but with Oprah, that's where it existed. It existed. It was you sitting there reading the book. And unless you had a group of friends that you decided to read the book with, it was very much you sitting down reading the book and then watching Oprah talk about the book with someone else. I think Our Shared Shelf is a little bit different because it exists on Goodreads, and Emma participates in conversations around the book, and it's very guided and it is a program. But I feel like there's this like extra third space to have discussion. And it's a feminist book club. So again, it's very much like this one person, or I guess, I don't know if it's just Emma, but a group of people are telling me what books are important to feminism. And this is the guidelines that they're setting out. So for me, the only problem I have with that is like, it feels very restrictive, even though it's probably not at all. But it's just a feeling I get about it. And that's how I felt about book clubs growing up. I tried to join one in elementary school because they had one for like kids. And like, it was like in fourth grade, they had like an advanced reader program. And then you could also be involved in a little book club. And we would read like chapter books after school. And I'm like, I read like, you would read like 4 or 5 chapters a week and then come and discuss them. And I'm like, all right, I finished The Phantom Tollbooth in one reading. I don't want to talk about it for 6 weeks. I'm done. Like, I'm bouncing. I can't just, can you give me the list of books you're going to discuss? Cause I just want more books to read. And that's what I thought book club was. I was like, I just want a list of people telling me what to read and I'll read them. And then that's it. It wasn't until I was much older that I appreciated the conversation around books. And I think Harry Potter was, and the internet was the changing point for me, because I didn't get it when I was in school, but I got it online.
I have kind of a random question, I guess, because I'm not super familiar with the other book clubs that are out there. Like, I've seen Emma Watson do her thing, didn't actually really know what it was about. So, like, that's good to know. And Oprah, I was aware of her book club because I don't think, like, just being alive, like, how could you not be aware of it? Because even if you didn't necessarily watch her show, like, I remember seeing the books and people would set up signs like, this is Oprah's book club book pick for the month or whatever. So it was hard to get away from that. And I even remember the controversy surrounding that other book. So it was definitely always there. But my question is, do they usually do current books, or do they sometimes go back to like classics? Like, if you haven't read this, make sure you do because it's important kind of thing.
Yeah, no, they go back. She's done William Faulkner and Leo Tolstoy, John Steinbeck, she does a lot. She goes back and forth. So the biggest, like, you know, when she did Wild, that was, again, when Oprah's, it was Freedom by Jonathan Franzen and Wild that really sent her book club back into like the huge popular like culture eye, because Wild became such a huge success. And she was very involved in like talking to Cheryl Strand, and like, you know, it's that like blew up Oprah's book club again. But right before that, they read The Tale of Two Cities and Great Expectations. Oh, so like, okay. You know, it wasn't, it was like they did Freedom by Jonathan Franzen, and Franzen got a ton of attention for it. And then she did classics and then went back to Wild, and then did Wild, and Wild blew up. And so, yeah, she bounces back and forth. They've been contemporary the past, I think she just did The Underground Railroad, and her latest pick is also contemporary, but yeah, it does bounce around a bit.
That is so random, because I was just watching Vlogbrothers videos to catch up on them, and John Green recommended that book today. I was watching a video about it, so that's weird.
If you buy it, it'll have an Oprah Book Club stamp on it.
Nice. Now, what about like category and genre? Does she really mix that up too?
That, I want to say yes. I haven't read everything, but I feel like I want to say yes, but it's really not. It's very much stories about people in their current socioeconomical state, you know what I mean? Like at a pinpoint in time. So like you're not going to read any like supernatural or okay. like, you know, sweeping romance type of books. They're very much like, they're very culturally satisfying reads, I feel like.
Yeah, I understand. Okay.
Cool. Yeah, so it bounces, they bounce around from like where they're set. Like she did like Night by Eli Wiesel, like, you know what you're getting when you read that. And the Faulkner books are very much like, you know, it's this particular story of a moment in time and this person's place in that place. And like East of Eden is a very specific story, and they're all very grounded in their characters and what that character's going through at that moment in time, as driven by the circumstances around them. But I don't know if that's intentional. That's definitely been the case with every book that I've read from this list that she has. But I don't know if it's official.
Cool.
But they are very, very good. Her recommendations. Mm-hmm. And every time I see it, I'm like, well, I should probably read that. And I, again, feel bad when I don't, because it's Oprah telling me to do something and I didn't do it. And so I'm letting her down every day. Yeah. but I did just want to, again, tie this back to our book club and like apologize for the fact that we haven't done it in a while. And I'd like to do it again, but I don't want to be the one to pick the book.
Well, I have gotten a few tweets from a specific fan of the podcast, Laura Morrow, who, when she hears this, will probably be very excited. She wants you guys to read Roar.
All right. You know what? Then let's read Roar, because I have nothing against reading Roar.
I will
read it.
It's good.
I feel like, I mean, okay. So we were going to do Dash and Lily's Book of Dares, and I'm literally the person that's holding this up because I'm pretty sure I'm the only one that hasn't read this yet.
I'd have to reread it.
Yeah.
I read it like
So I feel like we should definitely do that at some point. And I'm going to read Roar anyway, because if I don't, then Kristen will literally kick me out of the apartment. But
yes,
we should definitely plan on getting back on board with this, because I love our discussions.
We should push Dash and Lily again to the holiday season, because it is a very Christmassy book.
Okay. Yes.
So, and I'd be fine with kind of waiting till December to get back into that.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Plus, it, like, if we do it, there's it's a really good timeline. Like, it tells you what days to do it, so we can, like, do it on a specific day in the book.
Oh, yeah.
That's fun.
Thank you.
Okay, let's do that then. So, wait, did we just figure out what our next book club book is?
We did. It's going to be Roar by Cora Carmack. I'm putting it in the show notes, so it's official.
Yeah. Yes. So, end of July, we'll discuss it.
Yeah, I can do that. I guess.
Sounds good to me. I'll read it again.
I got some beach time coming up, because it's I live on the Jersey Shore, and it's beach time. So,
Nice.
I'll definitely download it probably tonight.
Awesome. I'm going to steal the book off of Kristen's nightstand.
Yeah, it's sitting there waiting for you.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, hey, that worked out really well. That was not planned. That was not staged. We just decided right now, this is what we're doing. Live on air. Cool. Well, thank you for discussing that, because that is really interesting. And I kind of hadn't thought about it before, the way that celebrities kind of cultivate this community of people around books and how much of an influence that it can have. And you kind of go like, yeah, it's obvious, but it really is a great way to get people involved in reading, because a lot of people don't necessarily have time anymore. But if somebody like Oprah or Emma Watson tells you to read, like, you're gonna read. So
yeah, and look what happened with Wilde. She got a movie and Reese Witherspoon and all sorts of stuff. And the Gilmore Girls episode where she decided to do Wilde and went on a hike. So, I mean, influences all around.
Well, and I just Googled celebrity book clubs, and apparently Sarah Michelle Gellar chooses books and has her own SMG book club on Instagram.
Oh.
Like, I literally just saw this now, and I was clicking through, and, like, it's just her sitting by the pool, like, with a book, and that's kind of how she chooses them, and it's kind of cool. I don't know. So if you're, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar fan, you can see what she's reading.
That's awesome. And I know, even if they don't have a book club, I know some celebrities, I'm pretty sure Lea Michele did this a few times. Again, I don't think it's a book club, but she'll just be like, hey, this is the book that I'm reading right now. And that'll kind of get people interested too. And might not necessarily lead to discussion, but a lot of celebrities, like, you know, shocker, just like us, they like to read books too. So that's kind of cool.
Jen Morrison does a lot of that on Twitter too. Like, yeah, I see titles pop up from her all the time on Twitter.
That's cool.
Yeah. So whatever she's reading on set, or, you know, wherever she may be at the time, like, she'll, yeah. So it's nice to just kind of see what they're reading too. I've gotten some recommendations that way.
Yeah. Guys, what if one day, because of a book club book we choose, it gets made into a movie?
Well, yes. Roar. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. If it's going to be anything, it's going to be Roar.
I am taking credit for it when it happens.
We will give you credit for it.
I am, like, shopping that book around. I had a girl at work read it. She loved it. She just bought a copy and gave me mine back, because she's like, I need to read it again. Here's your copy. Mine's just arrived this morning. And I'm like, that's genius. So I'm single-handedly trying to make the whole world read this book.
You're doing a great job with it. Okay, let's go into some book news to round out this episode. And the first item on our list is that Dan Brown is putting out a book later this year. I believe it comes out October 2017, and it's called Origin. Have you guys read any or all of his books?
Every single one.
Yep. Yeah.
Same here. Okay. I haven't read his, like, the last one, I think.
Yeah, the DC one. Or it's in DC. Did you read that one?
Yeah, I don't know if I read that one.
I didn't read that one either.
Or is that The Lost Symbol? I read The Lost Symbol because I own that one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, The Lost Symbol I didn't read. That's the DC.
Inferno. Wait, yes. No, I read Inferno too. Maybe I've read them all.
I read Inferno. I didn't read Whatever One Is Set in DC. That's the one I didn't read.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Lost Symbol. I read that one. I didn't read Inferno.
Yeah, so, I know I read Inferno. I know I read Inferno. I'm pretty sure I read Lost Symbol. It's on my bookshelf. And I read Digital Fortress and Deception Point and all of the ones from
I haven't read the older stuff, but the Robert Langdon ones, I think I'm only missing one. But
yeah, they're my like guilty pleasure go-to.
Yeah.
They're just fun and entertaining.
Like, yeah, they really are. It's an action movie in book form, which is my kind of thing. So I like them as well. But his latest one is going to be called Origin. Like I said, it's coming out in October. This one is set in Spain, and this one's going to be centered around modern art and technology, which like I'm not super excited about because I don't really like modern art that much, but he could end up making it interesting. And I guess the whole thing here is like the questions this book is going to answer is where do we come from and where are we going? So you guys think you're going to pick this up?
Yeah.
Probably.
Eventually, maybe not like an immediate purchase. Yeah, but
he's not an auto download, but he's like, there's a new book out. I should probably read it.
Yeah. Like as soon as it hits the library, I'll probably throw a request on so that I can read it eventually.
Mm-hmm. And this is, it's going to take place, at least in the beginning, the ultra-modern Guggenheim Museum. So like that's kind of interesting to me because that's a pretty big one. So we'll see what happens. I really want to read the one that I'm missing. So I'll probably do that eventually. But yeah, could be pretty cool. As usual, we're going to also be talking about some adaptations. And Kristen, why don't you take this one away about Holly Black's new book?
Holly Black has a book coming out in January called The Cruel Prince. And it has already been optioned by Universal Pictures, which is kind of crazy. She recently or previously had the Spiderwick Chronicles adapted. So she's not entirely new to seeing her work on the big screen. But like, I am a huge fan of the Curseworker series of hers. And like, I would love to see that become a series or a series of movies or something. Plus those are narrated by Jesse Eisenberg. So he would have to be attached to the project somehow because that would just be weird if he wasn't. But The Cruel Prince, in case you don't know what it's about, The Cruel Prince follows the journey of a human girl who's abducted into a world of violent, dangerous fairies and must scheme to ensure her escape and survival. So I'm seeing in this article that it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland and a little bit of Pan's Labyrinth, and it all sounds very fantastical and very cool. So while no one really has read it yet, it'll be interesting to see, you know, once the book comes out, how it goes over and if people are a big fan. And, you know, the subject matter sounds like it would make a really cool movie.
And I'm constantly just fascinated by the idea that these books that haven't actually hit the market yet are already being optioned. And not that that's necessarily uncommon. I've seen it plenty of times before, but I just really like the idea that, you know, they're so invested in the story or they think that they can really turn it into something great that it's something they're willing to take a risk on. And, you know, sometimes that never comes to fruition, but with a name like Holly Black, somebody who's, you know, pretty big, I would be surprised if it didn't actually happen.
Yeah, I would too. Honestly, I'd be surprised if it doesn't show up in theaters at some point.
And speaking of authors putting out new books, Maureen Johnson has a new series out. And Brittany, I don't think you're too happy about this.
Okay, so I put this title in here as Maureen Johnson has a new book, and here's why I'm not happy about it. There's nothing wrong with this series. I'm actually really looking forward to it. It's called Truly Devious is the first book, and the log line, I guess, brief description about it is it's a mystery, which is great for Maureen Johnson. I think she's going to be great at crafting a mystery, and it features crimes past and present. I've touched on infamous crimes of the past and the nature of media, but this one gets to internet fame and crime and justice in a new way. I'm pretty excited about the murders, which sounded more normal in my head a second ago, but I'm going to go with it. So I think that she plays really well with in her Sweet Scarlet. There's a lot of like attention and like what a name carries and you know, just being infamous. And then The Shades of London is very much her supernatural, like, thrillery murder type thing. And so this book is part of a trilogy, which is great because that means new Maureen Johnson for an extended period of time. And it's about a boarding school, which she's done before. And then there are children at the boarding school who are going to solve the murder of a classmate who was an internet celebrity. So there's also another murder with the headmaster who is trying to figure out who killed his wife and child in the 30s. The school's founder. I'm sorry, not the headmaster. I was like, that doesn't make any sense unless this book is set in the past, which does also wouldn't make sense because of the internet. So here's why I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy about it because I have been waiting for the fourth Shades of London book for many years, and I'm never going to get it because she decided to write a new trilogy and finish Sweet Scarlet. I'm just never going to get my conclusion, and it's really bugging me. I love the Shades of London so much.
How long has it been?
It's been 2 years since the third book. There was a little novella before the third book came out. So there's like three full novels, a novella, and then there's supposed to be a fourth book. And I just don't know if or when we're going to get it. I haven't heard anything about it in quite some time. And I'm just starting to think that it's going to be done. And we're not going to revisit it. However, she is writing another Scarlet book. So it could come years down the line, which is totally fine too. But I was really, when Shades of London first came out, I devoured it in like a sitting and then had to wait and wait and wait for the second one to come out. And I took my niece to her first book signing with Maureen Johnson because I was obsessed with Maureen Johnson. And I was like, you're going to love her. It'll be great. We made like these pins with Jack the Ripper on them because that's the first book is about Jack the Ripper's ghost coming back and terrorizing again a boarding school in London, and these ghost like huntery people like have these awesome like powers, and it's really cool. And then the romance kicks in. It's so good guys, it's really really good. But I'm never gonna get my fourth book because of this trilogy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be bitter reading them, but I'm excited to read them.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm also excited for you. So that's great. I don't know that I've ever read a Maureen Johnson book.
Oh, it's so good. Do you follow her on Twitter? Because it's...
No.
It's also good.
I know she's part of the, like, John Green circle, but that's about as far as my knowledge goes.
Okay, so quick side note about Maureen Johnson on Twitter. First of all, hilarious. Second of all, cute dog. Third of all, every Thanksgiving, she live tweets the Thanksgiving Day Parade as her secret mission to talk to Santa. And it goes on the entire parade. Like, she's like getting closer. I can smell the reindeer. And it's like her just trying to get to Santa. And it is my favorite new Thanksgiving tradition. I just wait. And like, she'll like tweet like the night before Thanksgiving. It's just like waits in Central Park. And like, oh my God. Crawls through these tunnels. And like, it's so funny. And it goes on for so long.
That is this adorable. Is very strange, but I'm kind of intrigued.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, and she also wrote fan fiction about Hank Green and Benedict Cumberbatch. Don't know if you've ever read that.
Okay, no, but send it to me immediately.
I will find it and send it to you. She wrote it as a perk for a project for Awesome 1 year.
Oh, okay.
And I think I have it because I bought it as a perk. And she also did another Project for Awesome perk. And I wanted to make sure to give her the credit that it deserves. It's called 1776, A Story of Tweets. And she wrote the entire, like, you know, revolution and writing of the Declaration of Independence as tweets between the founding fathers.
What?
Oh my gosh.
I also have that somewhere too, that because I bought it. I will find it. And the best is, and I'll just share this final, a bonus tweet that she included was from Paul Revere. And it's like Paul Revere's handle, and it just says, "The British are coming, please retweet."
Oh my God. Oh my God, I love that quite often.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
There was a bonus chapter, and it was all about Paul Revere, and it was just one tweet.
Oh my God. Okay. Super into this. Thank you for sharing that.
Also, she's like just hung out with Lin-Manuel Miranda, so you can let you know.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. Okay. Our last bit of book news is for those of you who are in the romance community and maybe want a new place to share your enthusiasm for your favorite romance novels. So Kristen, of course, take it away.
Yeah. I mean, who else? For those that are aware of a Polycon, I went for the first time this past year and it was an awesome event. It is organized and put on by Jen Armentrout and her two assistants. It's entirely done by them. So it's, you know, it's a huge undertaking and it takes a lot of time and effort, and they do it basically like voluntary. Like, it's not something they get paid to do, to put this on. They just work with Jen to do this. So they have had a lot of problems over the last, like, especially 2 years, because the event has just blown up so much. It's so popular, and it's such a great event that people, especially this year, they doubled the number of tickets that they sold for a Polycon, which went on sale, like, 3 weeks ago, and they sold out in seconds. I tried to get one of the highest level tickets, and I was there at noon and clicked the button, and I did not get one. They sold out in, like, 10 seconds. So I think this may be in reaction to that, because she's trying to kind of spread the love. She announced during a Facebook Live like Q&A session yesterday that there's going to be a new event. It's called the Origin Event, and its inaugural date is November 3rd of 2018. We don't know anything more about it, really. There's a website. There's a Facebook. I'll link to the actual website for it in the show notes, and from there there's a link to take you to all of the other areas where you can see it, like on Twitter and Facebook and all that. We don't really know exactly what it's going to be about. We know that a Polycon got its name, and it's the whole idea for it was based on the spin-off series from her Covenant series, which was The Return, and it's all about Seth from the Apollyon series. So that had a very specific purpose. Like, the reason she started a Polycon was to push this series that she was writing, and it just kind of blew up from there. So I wonder if maybe this new event is to do with a new series of hers or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see how this snowballs. I'll keep you up to date once she starts letting all the details fly. But I'm very excited because I really liked a Polycon, and I want to see what she has up her sleeve next. So keep stay tuned, basically.
Yeah. I love all of these, like, grassroots kind of conventions that have been popping up, especially with, like, Hank Green doing, like, VidCon, and they did the nerd stories and the other ones that they've got going on and everything, compared to the actual huge companies that kind of do this for a business. Having individuals come up with these ideas and putting them together is just really cool to me. And I think they have a much more genuine air most of the time. And so the idea of this is really awesome.
Yeah, it just is. And the authors love going to these things because she's an author, so she knows what it's like to sign all day, every day. So, like, they try to find time for the authors to, you know, just have time to hang out at these events and to, you know, get to know readers and have it not necessarily be a signing the whole time. Signing is important, and there's a large portion of time dedicated to it, but there's also other things where they can talk to people and just be people, as opposed to just being authors the entire weekend, which is really cool.
Yeah, definitely. All right, guys. Well, that's it for us for this week of Book Hype. And I guess we kind of do know what's coming next, which is really exciting. So just a reminder, we will be doing Roar by Cora Carmack for our book club book. We will try to get that discussion to you by the end of July. And we don't have a timetable for anything else right now because a couple of things are up in the air, but you can expect some author interviews, some other guest hosts coming on. Kristen and I are actually going to be away next weekend, so Brittany's going to be in charge. She's going to do something crazy and maybe bring on a couple other friends so that we can find something else to give to you.
It's actually just going to be me talking about Dr. Seuss again, just by myself.
Cool. I mean, I'm sure people will listen, so that's awesome. And of course, we'll be talking about book stuff. I know that wasn't really a necessary note, but I needed three things to say, and book stuff was just the third one, so there you go. Spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about books. The other thing actually that's coming up is San Diego Comic-Con at the end of July. I will be going to that, and a couple other Hypeable people will be attending as well. So I know we're going to be doing some author interviews there. I don't know if we'll be putting the audio on Book Hype. It kind of depends on how it all plays out, but I'm hoping to throw together a Book Hype episode for that time, because there'll be some cool book things to do, and content from San Diego is always a lot of fun. So we'll see what happens.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in once again. And until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.